Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
It's messy and it's in a bowl.
It's in my hands.
You're scaring me, sir.
Welcome, everyone, to the Cultaholic Classic Raw Review. Oh, fans, bollocks, said the lads from Cultaholic, aware that soon wrestling fans will return to wrestling shows around the world. Oh, fans, bollocks, say we, contemplating a seemingly dying World Wrestling Federation during the New Generation era, where they're quite few and far between. Who be we? I be Fake Geordie, radio presenter without portfolio, former Cultaholic heavyweight champion Tom Campbell. I am in the company of the bear in the big blue bar cage, Titan Shrugged. He is the head pen of Cultaholic. He does not need a pencil. He gets it right every gosh darn time. He is Justin Henry, and he is off for the USS Intrepid.
So in a week's time when we record, what will the mood be from you and your fellow Englishmen?
It's coming up. I don't know. Oh, mate.
It's... Gotta get through Denmark first.
Oh, do you know what? Okay, right. I'm gonna put this out into the world, mate, before we talk about 4th of July, because... I'm going to get some heat for this, right? If this was the wrestling and this tournament was booked like a wrestling show, Denmark should win.
No, because of what happened to Christian Eriksen.
Exactly. That's kind of a great story to tell. And I kind of feel like England are going into this match as the heels.
But they're the home team.
They are, but it's got that vibe of Canadian Stampede in Canada, in the sense that the Hearts were ostensibly the heels, but in Canada they were the baby faces.
So you're saying this is like when whenever John Cena would wrestle in Boston and get booed anyway?
Kind of. The other caveat to that, as like to make the John Cena reference as well, that another caveat that kind of makes us the heels is that apparently Boris Johnson is dragging his heels on green lighting Denmark as a country that people can travel to and from, which suggests that the fan turnout for Denmark in Wembley will be low. That feels like a heel thing to do. It kind of feels like, you know, that's like kind of making all the lumberjacks heels. That's kind of what they're doing.
Are you saying Boris Johnson is Mr. McMahon?
I think there is no chance. I have to say this. There is absolutely, alas, no chance in hell of you winning in the European Championship over England. I think
if this. If this leads to Christian Eriksen driving in on a Zamboni.
He's out of the medical facility! It's Christian Eriksen in the 89th minute. Oh, I shouldn't say this against my countrymen. I really shouldn't. But all I'm thinking about, like, if this was... But then, mind you, I would say also, if this was WWE booking the tournament, it'd probably be an Italy-Germany final. Just everyone gets booed. It would probably be that. But except if you're in Germany and Italy, big shout out to Italy and Germany. You test very well on the podcast feed. But yeah, I'm optimistic, but I'm very aware of how the rest of the continent will be perceiving it on Wednesday.
Just cheer for your country.
I'm gonna. But it was a little.
I don't know what other people think. Just enjoy what you enjoy.
I will, and I absolutely will. I'll cheer on England every goal they score against stupid Denmark. I will cheer.
I mean, goddamn! When I was watching the Eagles in Super Bowl 52, I was thinking, man, it's kind of suck being a Cowboys and a Giants fan watching this.
You know the struggle, but you didn't let it get you down.
Oh, it wasn't a struggle. It was like a long time, huh, Dallas?
Oh, Denmark, what a great story to tell. Oh, I'm sorry. We're not telling that story today. What a pity, never mind. How was the 4th of July over in the America? Did you have a lovely American Independence Day?
I was just happy because it was temperate. We've had some really hot days this past week, and it was cold down over the weekend, so it was good grilling weather.
Oh, did you barbecue?
Actually, I ate at my parents' house.
Nice.
My father's the master chef.
Amazing. That's nice. Did it feel a bit more like a normal 4th of July this time around?
It did and it didn't, because I think the people who set up fireworks every year and didn't get to really do it last year really overcompensated this year, because my neighborhood looked like a WrestleMania pyro accident.
Oh, God. I can imagine.
Just colors on all sides of my residence here. And I'm just like, I mean, even beyond midnight, it was still going.
Where do you stand on fireworks?
I personally don't mind them. They're kind of neat, but it's like if they didn't exist or they got rid of them, I wouldn't be that upset. It's just like, I could do with them, I could do without them.
Yeah. I think that the novelty of them is great when you're a kid, but I'm not going to say bad them. Because I know a lot of pets and that don't like them. I know that their purpose is a bit old hat. Wow, I'm making loads of enemies today, aren't I? Denmark should win. Ban fireworks. We're doing well, aren't we, mate?
An aging Tom here has had enough of fun.
Of old man yells at cloud. Do you know what it is, though? I'll tell you why. It's because we mentioned this before we hit record today. It's because, like, I'm obviously a little bit leaning towards the more negative because, spoiler, Raw was good. Not Raw last night in 2021. I mean, like, Raw in 1995. This Raw we watched, Justin, it was a good episode.
I know it won. Is on the merit of 1.5 matches, really.
But what are 1.5 matches? You know, they didn't open themselves up for too much. Not completely, but not too much bother on the show in question.
Just to end the fireworks discussion, though, I didn't notice when WWE got rid of pyro, whatever year that was, because like everybody on Reddit would be bitching like they should bring pyro back. I'm like, they got rid of it? That's how little I noticed it.
I think the pyro might have gone in like 2017. And then it was only when AEW went, hey, look, we've got fireworks.
No, it was, I remember when Greatest Royal Rumble had pyro. And everyone's like, what? They get it. Why can't we have it here?
We want the fireworks again.
We want a fake Yokozuna.
Fuck it, you cowards.
Fokozuna.
I'd have gone no Kozuna.
Tofuzuna.
Tofuzuna! John, all three of those. in perpetuity. All three of those. That'd be very nice. Thank you, John Eiley. Let's get into this week's Raw. Before we do, actually, I'm going to give you some writings from the Wrestling Observer from this week. Which week, where and when are we for this week, Justin Henry?
Well, since it is the night after a pay-per-view, we are live Monday, July 24th, 1995, from the famed and historic Louisville Gardens in Louisville, Kentucky.
We are still... How close are we to Danville, PA?
In terms of what?
In terms of distance.
quite a good many miles, I would imagine. Probably close to 1,000.
Right. So it's okay, fair enough. I'm just curious. Geography.
While you're reading, I'll check, see how close that was.
Okay, so that is where and when we are for this week. I'm going to take a look at the Wrestling Observer from this week to give you a little idea of what the rest of the wrestling world is up to this week. Some notes from the WWF as well.
Actually, as well, if it's 615 miles.
Okay, that's a little cheeky road trip. So the big
about 9 hours.
The bats easy. I could do that. No worries. The big story out of the WWF, which we talked about, in fact, Justin talked about during our In Your House 2 watch along. Thank you again to the professor, Nick Harrison, for joining us for that one. He was fun, wasn't he? Mm-hmm.
Oh, he was a lot of fun. Don't call him Mo. A lot of fun. Always fun to talk to someone who was of that time period, has some recollection of a new generation WWF. I know we get a lot of people on here that have no frame of reference, so it's more fun to see them react to what we grew up with. But to have someone on here who is a little bit more knowledgeable of that period and what they remember, that was good too. And Nick was a very entertaining and very fun to have around. Hopefully we have him back on sometime.
He will be back sooner than you realize. So keep an eye on the podcast.
Oh, God, he's here now.
He's dancing his way into the ring. The big news from In Your House, which Justin talked about last week, Jarrett and the Roadie are gone. So they walked out during the pay-per-view, unhappy with the way their storyline was panning out. Dave Meltzer goes into detail on this, saying they were, of course, unhappy about the angle, which had been a major source of discussion over the past few weeks. There are also rumors with Jarrett's father, Jerry, working as a consultant to WCW, that there's a connection there as well. WCW said to be interested in working with Jeff Jarrett. So what do you reckon, Justin?
I'm not sure what his contractual situation was, but if he had a valid one, which I can't see why he wouldn't, or why you'd put your secondary title on someone who had a tenuous contractual situation. Might be a little bit hard to get out of this deal for the time being. Minor spoiler, Jarrett does come back months down the line when the angles dies off. But yeah, that's what we discussed. Jarrett didn't like the idea of having two major indignities in one night, one losing the belt in his hometown, and two, being exposed as a singing fraud in this hometown. To have both of them in just a 1-2 combo would be kind of hard to recover from.
See, I think it would have been fine. I think it would have been brilliant to have it double down. So, like, all of this, like, his whole house of cards comes crumbling down on one night. Like, I really like that as a thing. Like, I think that would have been great. And then to see how Jeff Jarrett recovers from that would have been a great story. I just thought it was weird how he thought, oh, no, not all of it at once. I said, well, yeah, that's the joy of it, to watch a heel get built up and built up and built up and then just dropped from a great height. We didn't even get that.
There's that, but what's the follow-up? I mean, you figure Roadie's going to beat him in the blow-off.
Yeah.
So then what next for Jarrett? I think a wrestler has a right to consider how they're used to a degree. And I didn't even remember the part where Jerry Jarrett was consulting WCW. So if that's true, maybe it could be something political here, or maybe they really wanted to stick it to Jeff because their dad's sleeping with the enemy there.
Could you imagine if Jeff Jarrett, it turns out that Jeff Jarrett was the Intercontinental Champion with a contentious contractual situation that left them vulnerable. Could you imagine that happening twice?
Perish the thought.
Imagine that happening to me. They won't happen again if that is the case.
I'll tell you what, at least for the time being this summer, they won't have any issues with major stars not being under contract when they think they are.
That's going to be fine. Nudge, nudge, Agatha Wink from Marvel. The latest on WCW. So, we now have a confirmed, locked-in location for WCW Wrestling Nitro, as it is currently called. It is taking place on...
Just did that way.
Yeah, it should have... Yeah, World Championship Wrestling Nitro.
Yes.
ATM machine. The first Monday night show on the 4th of September is being moved to the Mall of America in Minneapolis with a Hulk Hogan singles match as the main event. There is also a lot of sentiment in putting on one classic match for 20 minutes every week involving guys like Sabu, Eddie Guerrero, Chris Benoit, Brian Pillman, and Al Snow. There's some interesting names amongst there.
Well, Snow was Snow did negotiate with both sides in 95 before signing with WWF, which I'm not really sure how he feels about that. People think of Al Snow as just a guy who carried head around. He was a lot more than that. He's got to be one of the most underrated wrestlers from this time period.
Mm-hmm.
Great athlete, great timing, a unique charisma, willing to do anything. Smoky Mountain was a great heel as part of the dynamic duo with Unabom, a.k.a. Kane, a.k.a. Isaac Yankum. He had a lot of upside, and we'll see him on Raw before long in kind of an ill-fitting role. Bischoff's idea was to have that car crash on his shows to be the complement to the main event. Catch everybody with the action and save the angles for the stars.
Also in WCW, we talk about saving the angles for the stars. On the WCW Saturday Night program on the 22nd of July, so just a couple of days before this episode of Monday Night Raw, quite an infamous segment went down in WCW history. I wonder if Justin Henry knows what I speak of.
Does this involve a certain dark, dank place? Perhaps something cavernous?
Something that may or may not be not hot.
Hurry, my son! Get away from the stove! The rare white Bengal tiger approaches! The bait has been set! Hurry! Hurry, my son!
My father, I smell his presence also!
I feel him!
This is the dark disorder.
This is... Join the dank disorder. So, let us spin this tale for you. Hulk Hogan finds himself in the lair of the Dungeon of Doom, who have been right buggers to him lately.
Where am I? There's no Hulkamaniacs here. I've never been here before.
He finds himself wandering around the dungeon, looking for the Taskmaster, looking for Kevin Sullivan, to which he is questioning out loud what this place is and where he is and where this is. And
why the water's the wrong temperature. So, for those who don't know what the hell we're laughing about, there's a spot with a fountain. Just a spout of water, and Hogan puts his hand in it. Come on, Hogan's wearing his normal Hulk Hogan attire, which makes it funnier.
He's fully dressed as Hogan, walking around a cave.
This is like Batman walking through an apartment store dressed as Batman. Just so out of place. So Hogan puts his hand into the water, then he pulls the windshield and goes,
it's not hot!
It's not hot!
Why would that be your reaction?
We'll just say, oh wow, that's cold. It's not hot.
And it wasn't like an exclamation of, oh, it's not hot. I thought that might have been hot. That's a surprise. Literally, like, his arm, like, repels back in horror. It's not hot.
He said it like it was the answer on a game show. and time was running out. It's not hot. Yeah.
Like, one take Hogan. Like... That's all you get out of me, brother.
What is this place?
So, after checking the temperature of the water... it's not hot. After the temperature water check, he confronts Kevin Sullivan.
I know you. I know you too. You two are behind the demise of Hulkamania.
Not just Kevin Sullivan, but my hero... The wizard, played by King Curtis Iaukea.
God, so King Curtis, who is the master of this Dungeon of Doom, bollocks. Sullivan, my son! So,
come forth, my son.
So Hogan's confronting them. He's going to shut down the Dungeon of Doom, and they're like, and they've got a secret weapon.
I know about the Zodiac. I know about the dangerous Kamala. Oh, yeah. I know about the Man-Eater. The Shark. But etched in stone is a legacy, the immortality of Hulkamania. And you too will be buried beneath it.
You don't understand, Hogan. This is where darkness dwells and lives. No nobody has ever been able to defeat the immortal Hulk Hogan except yourself. You see, Hogan, you're the one that created me. And because of that, it's this simple. Your demise is etched in stone.
Paul White bursts through the
wall. WrestleMania!
My power is a million times greater than the power of Hulkamania. I am the greatest giant to ever walk the face of the earth. And I am the one true immortal.
This was something else. This was something else. Somebody wrote this. Somebody signed off on this. Many people acted this and went, that's fine. Somebody edited this and went, that's fine. And somebody, maybe Eric Bischoff, signed off on it and went, yep, that's good to go.
Well, you can't blame Ed Wood. He died in 1978. Well, see, my understanding of this whole thing, as Kevin Sullivan has kind of described it through the years, the reason why the Dungeon of Doom came together was they knew it was like not good,
not hot.
They knew it was not hot, basically. But the idea was to give Hogan some safe, reliable guys to work with, like Beefcake and John Tenta and Kamala, and do all this dumb stuff to make Hogan look good. So he said, because Hogan was very mistrusting, Hogan wants to lay down. I don't know, brother. Like, this is like to win his trust by doing all this fanciful bullshit just so he would be kind of lull him in to be more of a team player. Like, well, we did all this for you, we gave you a bunch of clowns to punch around. That was basically the gist of all this, was to make Hogan, give him his own little story arc to where he'd gain his trust, basically. And well, you know what, I can't criticize it because it gives us a lot to laugh about years later.
Oh, it really does, because these segments are booked in for WCW Saturday Night until October. So the story continues.
Eventually, we'll get a leprechaun. We'll get
a Conan shark.
As a shark.
Kamala.
And Meng, the face of fear. Zodiac. Yes. No. Of course, Taskmaster. Hugh Morris, the man of question. This is like every rejected Batman villain you could think of. This is Dorkham Asylum. This is the Legion of Dumb.
This is another mention of the Legion of Don't.
My apologies to Meng right now. This was not your fault. Please don't kill me.
He got a golden spike for his sins, as we all remember, as the storyline tells us. Because that's what you do when someone's sinned. You go, here, have a weapon. There is a certain campy charm to this that isn't available in modern day Raw.
Whereas suicide Raw... chud.
Suicide squid.
Suicide squid.
I think it's a Red Dwarf thing. That was the suicide squid. Okay, it was a story from Red Dwarf.
It's like a very poppy story.
I tell you what, if you're a Red Dwarf fan, at JRH writing with what the suicide squid was all about. There you go. You might get a little Red Dwarf tweet. Apparently, Paul White, according to David Meltzer, was going to be called the New Warrior at this point.
Oh, my goodness.
Could you imagine?
Oh, my God. He'd be Mecha Renegade.
Could you imagine? He wouldn't be able to run to the ring. He's on 30 a day. He's smoking too many cigarettes. He ain't going to run to the ring.
I'm trying to picture Big Show doing the airplane promo.
Tear down the cockpit door, Hulk Hogan.
He has the grunty voice to pull it off.
He does, actually. He might. Do you know what? He's such a good character actor. He might have made it work. But at this point, he wasn't in the best of shape. Distrusity would have been more exhaustory.
Well, I mean, at this point, Giant was actually, like, really thin.
But he still was. But he was still, like, he wasn't quite the... He's not quite the man he becomes, but then even then... Maybe I'm doing him a disservice. Maybe this is probably the best shape. But either way, he's not...
You're throwing drop kicks at this point.
That's actually true. That is actually true.
He did a moonsault once, I think.
He did. Well, no, wasn't he gonna do one on Kevin Nash? And then Kevin Nash said, "Oh, I've just remembered I'm ill and I can't make that match."
I can't remember if that was the match, but if Nash got out of it at that point when Paul White was much heftier, I can't blame him.
No. From the new warrior to the old warrior, he's back, baby. Because on the night that the Dungeon of Doom promo aired, on the night that Hogan was testing the temperature of the water, in Las Vegas, a sellout crowd of 2,000 watched Jim Helwig make his return as the Ultimate Warrior and batter the Honky Tonk Man in the main event. No word on the match quality, says Dave, but it was told that Helwig looked to weigh 280 pounds and was as large and as cut as he was during his most juiced up period in the WWF. He is scheduled for a return show in Las Vegas once again in September. So this is Warrior back on the scene, apparently.
Yeah, this is so no word on match quality, but I'm gonna give it negative stars anyway, just because it's Warrior. I could see Dave saying that. Hang on, let me pull up that, because I think we looked at the show recently, but I know it's kind of a historic event in some ways. 1,100 fans were there. Any other notable names?
Surely if Warrior's really. Just on, like, they can't afford anyone else.
Rob Van Dam was in the semi-main.
Oh, wow, Robbie V.
His part of a tag team called Aerial Assault with a man named Bobby Bradley.
Oh, that's a little piece of history there.
Oh, they beat Principal Hindu and Superboy. I'm just reading what it says.
Poor Superboy. He never gets a good booking. Any other? Is that the most notable match other than the Warrior Honky Tonk Man?
Honky Warrior went 13 minutes.
Jesus! Is that counting entrances?
No, but I'm wondering how much stalling there was.
13 bell to bell. Yeah, they had Honky had to be out the ring, like, singing basically his entire album.
Larry Zbyszko, head of agent in that match.
talking of match quality. Here's an interesting one from ECW, and I wanted to bring this up because it kind of it suggests that ECW fans weren't always as accepting of the wrestling as we've been led to believe. So this is just coming from Dave, so don't shoot the massager on this one. Eddie Guerrero and Dean Malenko had some technical classics at ECW over the past week or so, not as well received as history may tell you. Chants among the fans back and forth of boring and shut the F up, which pretty much took much attention away from the match. The crowd divided as Eddie and Dean are having this technical classic. Some are chanting boring, others are telling the people who are chanting boring to shut up. Paul E. grabs the house mic during one of these matches and says, "I'm sorry if you find a fine display of scientific wrestling boring, but I was wondering if you could peel back your foreskin so I could see your nose." Presumably directed at a fan who was chanting boring.
I don't think this would have been the arena. This would have had to have been... I'm guessing this was the Florida spate of shows, because that's when Dean won the TV title from Eddie, and Eddie got back a week later in Middletown, New York. So... Because the arena fans loved Eddie and Dean. And if any fans there were chanting negative stuff, it had to be a small smattering.
Well, the wrestlers obviously were affected by it because, according to Dave, they start giving the fans who are catcalling the match the middle finger. Guerrero wins after a superplex. He gets on the mic and says, "You pay for your tickets and you have every right to cheer for who you want and what you want. But when you depreciate somebody's work, somebody's athletic ability, it only shows your education, brother." And that got the biggest pop of the show, apparently.
He's absolutely right. Yeah, that had to be one of the Florida shows. That had to be. Because I cannot imagine, unless it's just a couple of rogue fans at the arena, because they always cheered the Eddie, Dean, Benoit, Jericho, all that stuff. And they were all over that. if you had an international following and you were a great technician, you know, they absolutely respected you. And contrary to the belief that arena fans were always assholes to everybody.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that, because I read that and I thought, ah, that's weird, because that kind of goes against what I've always believed, which is the idea that, you know, the ECW fans were well up for the wrestling, liquid wrestling, as Ross would say.
Based on the weekend here, this had to be the weekend where Dean won the belt, probably on the Saturday show or whatever. So maybe it was like the Friday show, and maybe, I don't know if that was Fort Lauderdale or what, but...
Mm. One more story to get to. Titans lawyers send a mildly threatening legal letter to Bobby Rogers this week. Mike Rapporno, his real name, asking to cease and desist using the WWF light heavyweight facsimile belt and threaten legal action if he didn't sign a statement to say he'd never use the belt in public. This came on because Rogers used the belt on a Rolanda TV show that aired nationally this past week. Obviously, the lawyers didn't see the show if all they knew was he used a belt and claimed he was a WWF belt. Rapporno wrote back to the Titan lawyers saying that he wasn't going to stop using the belt on television and wrestling appearances. Do you know anything about this? Because I didn't know the full thing here, but I thought this seems mildly interesting.
I'm not familiar with this story whatsoever. In fact, the light heavyweight belt at this point would have either been in Mexico or Japan. Let me see who that would have been.
Bobby Rogers.
There was an old light heavyweight belt that debuted in 81, but...
Well, it's a facsimile belt, so it's not the real one. Basically, right. It sounds like a guy has been on a TV show carrying around a WWF title belt. Somebody's told WWF's legal team, and they've gone, right, stop doing that, cease and desist. Randomly.
The belt at this point was held by Aero Flash, who would hold it until March when he lost it to a great Sasuke. So, obviously, it isn't that belt. So, it's probably just some guy just trying to cash in on something. And I mean, it's not a major story, so either they scared him to stop using it, and that was that. And it didn't make that impact the story, as far as I know.
But you've opened an interesting can of worms there. So, the WWF light heavyweight title belt was still in circulation at this point.
Yeah, it debuted in 81. It was mostly defended on like West Coast events. It was like main canonical WWF never really used it. It was just something that would show up in New Japan once in a while, or would show up in Mexico for a UWA promotion. Very rarely was it ever defended in New York, although it was once in a while. And then it kind of just drifted away. Guys like Chris Benoit was WWF light heavyweight champion in like 1991. That's a statement of fact.
Wow.
When he was Pegasus Kid.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
And in fact, in kind of interesting bit of foreshadowing, in a year and a half's time, that belt will show up in WCW as part of Ultimo Dragon's J Crown 8 belts.
Yes, I remember that now. Now you've said that. Yes.
So a WF belt did appear in WCW programming for a time when Ultimo Dragon toted around all those wonderful belts. Plus WCW's Cruiserweight belt, plus the NWA Middleweight belt. He had 10 belts at once.
That's a good look, wasn't it, all them belts?
That photo is legendary.
It's great,
bro. That is frameable.
John, could you do the light heavyweight title going in the bin? Ultimo Dragon dropping it in the bin, please.
I was just, well, 9 more to go.
Okay. We're going to need a bigger bin. So that's all the wrestling news from this particular week in the year of our Lord 1995. Let's go to Justin Henry, who's going to talk us through this week's episode of Monday Night Raw from the end of July.
Well, in keeping with the angle, but the real life occurrence of Jeff Jarrett and the Roadie walking out the night before, we begin with the footage of the end of that match, where Sean beat Jarrett to win the Intercontinental title at In Your House 2. Roadie tripped Jarrett by mistake. Jarrett's a bit miffed. Turns, walks right into chin music. 1, 2, 3, new champion. Basically, if Jarrett comes back, they'll pick up the angle where it left off. And if he doesn't, oh well, happy burial. So they're covering their bases either way. But see, this is a historic show here for another reason. This was the debut of one of the best minimalist entrance sets of all time, the giant RAW in red brick coloring.
Was this really the first time we saw it?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, this will become, this is kind of like when you think old school Raw, this is kind of what they do with the R that Sabu would end up falling off.
Yeah, Helms laying around his head before Team Taz tried to save his life.
Bless him.
Yeah, so the wrestlers walk out from behind the A, either on the R side or the W side.
I like that. I like the big Raw logo as the entrance. It's cool. As you say, minimalist.
It's minimalist, but it's timeless also. Mm-hmm. So Sean leads us off. We begin immediately with Sexy Boy playing. Because at this point, I believe it's not long after this that Bret Hart is informed, you're getting the belt from Diesel in the fall, and we want you to lose it to Sean at WrestleMania. So at this point in time, they're ready to go all in on Michaels as the top guy.
And you can tell, like, you can tell that energy is behind him. But also, he's the biggest star in the company at the moment. Like, he's just like, he's the man. He's got that energy, that charisma about him. He's got the crowd behind him. He feels like the biggest deal the company's got.
He was like the modern day Flair in the sense that when he walked out, he just radiated energy.
Mm.
There was just something about him when you saw him, you knew you're watching a genuine star.
And great as a heel and great as an asshole. Like it's a nice thing to have a guy like that who is both as a babyface and a heel, like perfect in those roles, whatever you need him to be.
Absolutely. Of course, it doesn't help that Vince goes, Mr. Charisma. It's like, we have a TV. Yeah, we can see.
You don't need to tell us that he's charismatic. You tell us he's charismatic when he's not charismatic. You don't need to tell us when he is, because we can see.
Don't be the waiter at the restaurant who tells me how great the steak is when I'm halfway through it.
Yeah.
I'm already eating it. That's good enough. So, Shawn Michaels is facing Jimmy Del Rey of the Heavenly Bodies. Who?
Talking a delicious steak.
Here's, I can tell, this is his last appearance in the company.
Oh.
I think the Heavenly Bodies finish up after this. Although Tom Pritchard does come back as, well, we'll cross that bridge eventually. Oh.
Did you not think that Jimmy Del Rey looks like Shawn Michaels in a parallel dimension?
I think you should apologize to Shawn Michaels.
I kind of want to do a little Loki spoiler here.
Loki spoiler?
There's a little scene in Loki. I won't.
Was it? You're gonna throw a roundhouse kick at his head and then him with a key crusher?
Yeah. No, no. Christ, the TVA came after Loki. Kill them. I'm enjoying Loki, by the way. It's very, very good. It's it could be the best series they've done, I think.
I'll take your word for it. I don't watch a whole lot of the Marvel television, so I couldn't tell you either way.
Ah, fair enough. Well, it is very good. I was going to do a little joke there. If you know where I was reaching for the joke, tweet me at Tom Campbell, and we can have a little nod and a wink together without ruining it for other people. Thank you very much.
And if you're like me, just smile and nod and assume Tom knows what he's talking about.
There you go.
So Del Rey gets the in the ring treatment, which is a sign of the times for him.
I wrote in my notes a worrying sign.
Non-title match. Del Rey does... Well, Sean, there's a spot where Sean gets Del Rey into an arm twist. And Del Rey does something like an old school where he goes up the ropes to try and escape. Bounces the ropes, flips back. So Sean just knocks him to the floor. But all that for that.
Does Del Rey know he might be out the door at this point? So is he just showing off?
Might be. Like, please reconsider. I can do all this nifty stuff. He does get a nice float over DDT, which he did really well. Mm. And he does the Sean taunt, which is just repulsive.
I love that. Oh, when he is in full sleazeball mode, I love Jimmy Del Rey. When he's like grinding, and it's just like, oh God, this is awful. But I can't look away. It's compelling.
It's like when March had the upsetting vision of Bart one day being a male stripper. Bang, bang, Bart.
John!
No, for the love of God, don't do that. Twitter has suffered enough.
Bang, bang, Del Rey. John will get a strike against his name again.
John, you are free to refuse some of these.
No, you're not.
Lawler shows off his inner Roger Ebert by referencing Apollo 13 and Waterworld.
Saying that Waterworld will be the end of Kevin Costner's career. I mean, he was very close.
Hold my beer as he makes the postman. Like, his career is not dead. He's just he's not as prominent as he once was. Perhaps not making 6-hour self-indulgent movies would be, you know, a step in the right direction.
Just a thought.
But what do I know?
Just a thought.
I'm not an actor director.
I've been down the rabbit hole of Steven Seagal movies.
Oh God.
I've not watched many, but like my brother and I have just been dumbfounded with the amount that he churns out. And I've watched clips of some of them, and oh my God, like he's so bad. But it's like he can't. I said to my brother, I said, does Steven Seagal say no to any film? Because he's made hundreds and they're all shite. Like, obviously, the earlier stuff is fine. But, like, I'm talking, like, from 2000 to 2021, he's made about 100 films and they're all shit. Like, comically yeah. shit. But in everything, he plays Steven Seagal. Just this unstoppable sex machine monster who is the master of all martial arts. It's like, it's Steven Seagal.
It's what Vince would do if he made action movies starring himself.
It's he would.
and wrote the script. You owe it to yourself one time to find the find the episode of Saturday Night Live that he hosted, which could be the worst episode in the history of the show.
Oh, that's a great shout.
Because he approved of the sketches he was in and how he was used.
Oh, okay. So there's two things for you to find after this. Two bits of homework for you. So I want you to find Vince McMahon in Saturday Night Live.
No, Steven Seagal.
Sorry, Steven Seagal in Saturday Night Live. I don't know why I said Vince. Steven Seagal in Saturday Night Live, right? Find that. It's amazing. And also, big shout to Ralph the Movie Maker, who I discovered on YouTube, who about 9 months ago did a video about Steven Seagal movies that had me rolling this morning. And big love to Ralph the Movie Maker for that, because it was just, oh gosh, mwah, chef's kiss. What a guy. Both Steven Seagal and Ralph the Movie Maker.
One is presumably more in touch with reality than the other.
Yeah, you'd hope so. At least one of them.
So, Delray misses the top rope splash. Sean fires up. He goes for chin music. Delray moves, but Pritchard eats it instead. Then Sean gets Delray with one. That was a spirited 5-minute match. No wasted motion.
Lovely little pacey affair that was.
Oh, it was. And then we get kind of a disturbing ending here where Sean's wriggling on the mat while holding the belt. Okay, Sean's an eccentric guy. Then he gets up and teases pulling his pants down.
This is the play.
Before teasing the primary waistband, and then thankfully he stopped before he got too far.
This is the Playgirl era of Shawn Michaels that we're seeing live in living color. Like, he knows it. If OnlyFans was a thing in 95, I think Shawn Michaels probably would have had one.
If it's this company, it's hardly fans.
little bit from the Observer about this match. Shawn Michaels. This is Dave's words. Shawn Michaels also beat an overweight Jimmy Del Rey in another hot television match, ending when he super kicked both Del Rey and Tom Pritchard, giving the impression that they are, for all real purposes, through with Titan. Even though Del Rey looked way too heavy in the table muscles, mate, he looked sharp, he looked fine. He showed as a performer he's probably the most unheralded great worker at the WWF. The show ended with some major satellite transmission problems, but that's more for later in the show. So ignore I said that last sentence. But yeah, so a few digs on Del Rey's weight. I don't think Del Rey looked any different to how he has done for the last 9 months in the company.
I mean, he's always had that roly-poly physique.
Yeah, it's part of his charm.
That's the word. Speaking of charm, we get some highlights of With My Baby Tonight, which thankfully, instead of playing the whole video again, we don't have to do that anymore.
No.
Where Vince accuses Jared of lip-syncing and says that Rhodey made the claim, so they're trying to keep that angle going, keep the ball rolling. and even though both of them are gone. So, and then they showed Jack, because got to hammer that point home. And here's Doc Hendricks yelling again about I saw something in the attic, and then he just like Doc did not stop to breathe during that promo at all.
I saw something in the attic.
it was just one yelling sentence after another, with no breath in between, no pause.
I noticed that Vince, like I compared this to, remember many years ago when we began our journey to our horizon in 1993 when Mr. Perfect left. And Vince really went to town on calling Mr. Perfect a coward and like scared of wrestling and all this. He really went to town on him. And I didn't, whilst they were hammering home that Jeff lost, I didn't feel like Vince went in as heavy on Jeff as you maybe think he did. Like, I feel like he wants to tell the story. And even then, Vince was a bit like, well, maybe we'll get the answer at some point. Who knows? Like, he's kept his options quite open. That Jeff might
leave it open-ended.
Yeah.
Because, hey, who knows? Tuesday morning, Jared can come back and they can tape stuff to insert into the upcoming episodes to, you know, keep the angle going. Mm. Who knows? And it's kind of touch and go at this point.
Yeah, but he doesn't go. They address it, and it's good they address it, but they don't go in as hard as they did on other people that have left.
Yeah, this is probably the smarter play, because at this point, you need every wrestler you can get that actually has worthwhile talent.
Talent, yeah.
So later on in the show, we get the reason why I'm a bit more chipper than usual here. Bret Hart versus Hakushi is our main event.
Oh, yeah.
We get a full highlight package of their feud to this point. But in the meantime, how's about a couple squash matches?
Yay! Give us some squashes.
The Smoking Guns versus Stockhauser. That's a name.
These guys are like traveling jobbers, like the traveling Wilburys. Because they had a couple of matches on WCW Saturday Night, did old Faulkner and Stockhauser.
I wish it was Rick Stockhausen.
It would have made more...
No swearing.
John! Working you this week, mate. I'm so sorry. Rick Stockhausen, please. Very nice, very evil.
Hello, I'm Billy Gunhausen. I'm Mr. S. No swearing.
You're Mr. Butt.
So there are some great jobber names there. We need more Faulkners and Stockhausers in the world.
Faulkners, Stockhausers, Contaruckuses. Contaruckus, Contaruckai.
Sadly, we never got John's mother Faulkner. They could have done like a psycho gimmick.
Or like Mother Faulkner?
Yes.
Stupid Faulkner?
Dungeon of Dumb Faulkner? It's not Faulkner hot. Just, if you've not seen It's Not Hot yet, you have to watch at least 300 or 400 times, like I have throughout my life.
Oh, it's a dream. It's a dream. It's a dream.
Oh, here's your sign of the times. We get a promotion for the upcoming service, WWF on America Online. Let me tell you something. My inner child heard this.
Mate, I've got something I want to share with you. Right, so I heard this, and I was the same as you. And so as the Guns are coming to the ring, they're talking about WWF's partnership with America Online. And I was like, oh, I wonder if there's anything online about this. Mate, I found in the deep part of the internet a transcript from an AOL chat around this time.
It's Vince.
Vince McMahon. Taking questions from the fans.
On an upcoming show, we have to act that out, because that was one of the most amazing things ever.
Oh,
Vince was a combination on there of prickly and sarcastic, and it's
well,
it was like proto Mr. McMahon.
Okay, well, you have a choice then, because I've got the transcript in front of me. Do you want to do it now, or would you like to do it on a later show?
We'll wait till a crappier show, because we don't want to sully Bret versus Hakushi here.
That's a good shout. Okay, so there's a tease for you. We are going to do a transcript of Vince McMahon's AOL chat, and
let's do it for Taker. Let's do it during Taker and Kama at SummerSlam.
Perfect.
Because that's like 16 minutes long.
Perfect. That's what we'll do. That's what we'll do.
Okay.
Oh, I'm excited. So, right, the guns versus the Faulkner-Stockhauser connection.
Now, one thing I noticed about this show is that Vince makes a concerted effort to push everything for SummerSlam all at once.
Yeah.
Because the Smoking Guns end up wrestling Eli and Jacob Blue at SummerSlam. There's no story reason for it. It's just an undercard match between two tag teams, just something to throw in there. And so to try and create a connection, Vince goes, Faulkner and Stockhauser are a lot like the Blue Twins. They kind of look alike, but not really. So like,
in the sense that, you know, they're two people.
And it's like, so the guns have a twin beating fetish. Next week, they take on Nikki and Brie Bella.
And the Killer Bees. And the Dudley Boys.
And there's conjoined twins on The Simpsons that the monorail anchor split apart. The French are called Twin Tragic.
And me and my cousin, who my geography teacher thought were twins when I was in high school. So imagine my geography teacher's face when she asked my mum, out of Tom and Jay, who is oldest, my mum went, oh, Tom is by 3 weeks.
Well, that's awkward.
And her face. And then mum went, they're cousins. They're not twins.
Okay. Apparently Jay was a squatter.
Jay put a barricade up, apparently.
Damn freeloader.
You don't tell me what to do.
Let's smoke them out.
Oh, God. No.
In the name of all that is holy.
No, John. Just Photoshop the Undertaker and tag him in it.
So this is a match. Guns get a lot of offense in. It's they end with a sidewinder that looks like the most painful version of the Midnight Hour ever.
It looked rough, didn't it? In the landing, especially, yeah. Looked rough.
Although Billy got about 85 feet of height on the jump and a nice primal scream.
He gets a lot of height, doesn't he? A
lot of ups.
You would say it's a golden up that he gets on that jump. He really does.
I don't see Billy going to ricochet in a dunk contest to see who would win.
Ooh! I wonder whether the general height of Billy Gunn would supersede the reach of Ricochet.
Well, Billy Gunn, he can jump pretty high, and I'll bet with his power he can do a nice tomahawk slam, just a rear back and just like Sean Kemp back in the day.
He's got the height. I reckon that Billy Gunn would do a brilliant top rope nothing.
I did have a nice laugh here at the end of the match because earlier on, Lawler mentioned Apollo 13 and Waterworld, which are two movies from 1995. Then Vince goes, smoking for the Smoking Guns, like the mask from the year before. It's a little behind times.
I missed that, but I'm glad that you wrote that down because that's fun.
I want to see the mask with Vince McMahon now.
Is that Vince being like, that's the most current I think I've ever known Vince McMahon be?
Probably.
You know, it's still like you say, not dead on the times, but, you know, close enough, within a decade.
It was a catchphrase for the time, definitely. That was a tremendous movie.
A very 90s catchphrase. I think as long as Jim Carrey was around doing stuff, sort of smoking became a catchphrase of
my favorite Jim Carrey movie.
Go on.
That one.
Oh, I thought you were going to say there was one.
I was saying that one is my favorite one.
Yeah, that's a good shout. I'm going to go Man on the Moon.
Good shout,
my favourite Jim Carrey one. This Sunday, Wrestling Curiosities, the bizarre wrestling career of Andy Kaufman. I'm excited to share that story afresh.
Classic.
It is a classic, and it encouraged me to watch Man on the Moon again in preparation for it, and he's so good in that. But then I watched Andy and Me. And you just see what a state Jim Carrey was doing that film. And you both feel really sad, but at the same time, like, really appreciate the performance even more because he was so deep into the role. And I don't quite... I'm not sure where... Like, obviously, like, Jim Carrey is a legend, and, like, you see stuff like Andy and Me, and you think, is he all right? Like, this is... I get that, you know, you throw yourself into the performance and stuff, but it seems like he's not in control.
It takes a lot of energy to do... to be that immersed into a part and to put all your energy toward that.
Yeah.
But on the subject of Andy, have you ever seen the uncensored footage of him yelling at Lawler on David Letterman's show?
Yes. It's just... it's incredible. And I love that wrestling was at that point where people couldn't quite see where... that they couldn't quite tell. Like, there was enough wrestling... but then that was Kaufman through and through. Like, Kaufman did skits on Saturday Night Live where people went, has he just gone off the rails here? Like, has he just binned off the script? And I love
that... He wore that neck brace everywhere, too.
He did.
He kept it up.
He was the most wrestling non-wrestler because he completely, like, was completely kayfabe the whole time. And not just in wrestling, but in entertainment. Like, he played these characters so beautifully. And to the point where, like, people, like, he went for that uncomfortable laugh. He's very akin to a Bo Burnham, I think. Like, Bo Burnham will go for that uncomfortable laugh. And to the point where it's not even a laugh, it's just uncomfortable. But I kind of have a weird respect for that. Like, the idea of, like, you are, like, you're pulling emotion out of people. And awkwardness is an emotion that you're pulling out of somebody. Like, you're bringing somebody into the room with you in that way, you know? It's just, yeah.
It's a real, I don't need your applause.
Yeah. I don't
need... It's the opposite of pandering. He's pandering to himself, and that's it.
Yeah. He doesn't need anyone to like him. He doesn't care. He's just doing his thing. If you're with him, whatever. It doesn't, just really doesn't matter. If anything, he hopes you're not.
Well, here's the opposite of Andy Kaufman. As you go to Dud plugging a shirt.
We got the Dud!
He's plugging the worst looking Ain't I Great shirt ever. It's like a mall kiosk special.
Oh, it is just pathetic, isn't it? It's a pathetic shirt.
Like the Homer was a dope shirt. Oh, they sold out an hour ago. It says Ain't I Great on the front, and it says not on the back. Oh, take that, Jarrett. He must have had those in storage way for this angle, and we just gotta sell them.
Here's the thing, though, right? If you're wearing a jacket, no one's gonna get, like, the punchline. If it's a cold day and you're wearing a coat, they're just gonna see you wearing a t-shirt that says Ain't I Great.
I want to know who bought that shirt unironically.
I'm desperate to know.
Not as a gag gift.
Somebody had somebody saw that shirt on Barry Dudinsky and went, get me the phone. I need to make a call.
That is kitsch of the highest order.
Son of a kitsch.
And they also plug, and boys, is a 90 sentence, the cassette of Ain't I Great.
Oh, I love this.
Like, you know, compact discs are a thing, right?
Cassettes, baby.
I'm with the 8-track.
By 1995, compact discs were, like, they were the preference, weren't they? By 1995.
Oh, yeah.
So, but the cassettes were still very much in the loop at this point. Like, I think I would have probably bought, like, I would have been buying cassettes and CDs at the same time.
Yeah, but compact discs, they were so contemporary. But yet so cheap. I mean, you can get 12 of them for a penny as long as you don't open any more mail from that company after that.
I wonder whether cassettes were just cheaper to make. They must have just been cheaper to make. Like, they've got all those old WWF the Music cassettes, and they stick a little bit of paper in the top left corner and sellotape it over, and they just hit record and play. And just, there we go, we've got a whole new cassette.
Could be what happened.
That is how I'm a kid of this decade. That is how I did radio shows. Like, I had a karaoke machine, and it was how I did it. And just every time I see a cassette, it gives me a nice warm fuzzy feeling. It reminds me,
dude. In the years before CD burners, when I got WF on AOL, and they uploaded everyone's theme song to, like, the file section, and you could just download them on your hard drive. Cassette tapes full of entrance themes.
Oh.
That was my jam.
Mwah. Posh Bertie right now, I'm hoping, is enjoying his cassette tape of Slam Jam that he won just a while ago.
And I'll say, what did he lose?
What did it cost? Everything.
Well, We go from retro to contemporary as we get a little teaser vignette hyping up the debut with a Howard Finkel intro from Hollywood, California, weighing 260 pounds, Gold Dust. Gold Dust is coming.
And all we got was like the words Gold Dust written in, quite literally, Gold Dust.
It's like Gabbo.
It is, isn't it? It's Gabbo.
Looks like Gold Dust is coming.
Now, our boy Dave, at this point, reckons that Gold Dust is going to be a cowboy from Hollywood.
Well, because they knew who was going to be Gold Dustin Rhodes.
So Dave seems to think they will still lean into the cowboy gimmick.
Well, I mean,
with a Hollywood twang.
He can't be so far removed from Dustin Rhodes that.
Yeah, you're
or
right.
Or could he?
You're right. There's no way they would take him too far away from what made him the natural.
Jermaine the Lumberjack called him Sawdust.
Oh!
He did the Lumberjack song on Roll that time.
Oh my god, Sawdust! John!
I'm a lumberjack.
Yeah, no, okay. I cut down trees, I wear high heels, suspenders, and a bra. It is him! I wish I'd been a girly, just like my dear papa.
I'm going that segment where he sang it and then they panned the Booker holding the axe with the fake beard. It's one of the greatest things I ever saw in my entire life. Booker's like, I'm going to kill somebody. It was tremendous. You have to wear it. What? Those two were gold together, pun intended.
Book dust, man. Those were days. We didn't know how good we had it, did we? We didn't know how good we had it.
No, we really didn't. Those two were just, they were just made for each other.
Amazing. Amazing.
And then Vince plugs Skittles, but he can't do it as good as JR, obviously.
Skittles that are yummy in your tummy.
Not the same. We need JR yelling.
Oh my god,
Rudy,
they're so fruity!
My god, Fruity! Skittles! You're good.
I appreciated JR, as you beautifully did it there, selling Skittles like they were Austin running down the ramp to beat up Vince McMahon. With the same energy.
Well, apparently they were his favorite candy, so he gave it the over-top plug, which is why he did that.
Oh, were they really his favorite? Is that why he loved them?
I believe that was the story behind it. So
nice.
I turned into a running gag.
Skittles 316.
How far can JR go with it?
Amazing. I didn't know that. I just thought he was just doing it I think he was just sort of doing it for the comedy value of just going over the top with it.
It was both.
Bit of column A, bit of column B.
We get Fatu touring San Francisco. I think I saw Samu at one point in the vignette early on, just hanging out with the crew.
Mm-hmm. I did too.
And then Fatu shows off the Cow Palace, the famed Cow Palace where Eddie Guerrero would actually win the WWE Championship in about 7.5 years.
Yeah, going there because although like he's there, Fatu's there talking about how old I used to live in the shadow of the Cow Palace. Used to go to events there. I'm getting tingly thinking about being back here. They'd host events over the years there, but from 1995 they didn't go to the Cow Palace 95 or 96 or 97 or 98 or 99 or 2000 or 2001 or 2002 or 2003 or 2004. 2005 would be the next time they go to the Cow Palace.
04 they were there because that's when Eddie won the belt, was 2004.
04 at the Cow Palace. My apologies. It was 04 at the Cow Palace, but still a long bloody time.
And even then, I'm pretty sure he's wrestled there already, Fatu. He makes it sound like he's never wrestled. Like, this is my dream to wrestle here. You did it. You and Sam beat the Beverly Brothers in the second match of the show, remember? Shh, that didn't happen.
He's just going, oh man, I'm just trying to make a difference. I'm just getting into the wrestling world. Mate, you were in a War Games match. You've been in War Games at this point. What are you playing at?
You ran over Stunning Steve on behalf of Jean-Paul Levesque. Boy, that didn't happen yet. Boy, that sounds like a weird sentence then.
Oh no, the TVA are back. The TVA are coming to fix an error in the timeline.
The man who's paying you, you're going to sit on his face one day.
Is that going to make a difference? In a way.
to your
bank balance is going to make a difference.
I mean, UPN is kind of network TV.
There you go. That'll do it. It's. I like the idea of, like, Rikishi of Salova Fartu going, I don't know, I've just tried the Headhunter sort of savage gimmick and it hasn't really clicked. I've tried being sort of contemporary and it's just not clicked. I've tried, like, hey, maybe it's not even being Samoan, maybe something completely different. I've tried the Salt, it's not clicked. I don't know what I need to do. And then somebody from the future just says, just get your ass out. What? Just get your ass out, mate. Well, okay. Ka-ching, 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 ka-ching.
I heard a voice in the bathroom stall next to me for some drunk puking his guts out. And, like, it made perfect sense.
Get your ass out, man.
A voice from above, because I was sitting down and he was standing up. I mean, like that, I'm just saying.
in a
stall. You'd be wanting, you'd be twoing.
That's true. Or twoing while wanting.
That's true.
Let's move on.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Waylon Mercy versus Gary Scott.
Yeah, I love Waylon Mercy's music. Every time I hear it, I love it a bit more. Just that, that frantic piano. It's dun, just dun, gorgeous. Dun, 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 dun,
dun, dun, dun. It's on Spotify.
Is it? Oh, it is, isn't it? I like the use of piano in a wrestling entrance theme.
Oh, it fits him.
Yeah.
Someone wrote in the WrestleCrap years ago saying that for years he thought the phrase "life's going to be in Waylon Mercy's hands." He was actually saying "life's a bowl of beans in Waylon Mercy's hands."
Life's a bowl of beans in Waylon Mercy's hands.
Watch too much Forrest Gump. Dance by me on a park bench. Life's a lot like a bowl of beans. It's messy, and it's in a bowl.
And it's in my hands.
You're scaring me, sir.
I used to be Darren Spivey.
We've arrested the I-75 baked bean killer today. Terrorized 3 states.
Are you a psychic friend? No, not that Darren Spivey. It's Gary Spivey, you're thinking.
Oh, God, he's coming soon.
Oh!
It's just like gold dust.
Bring him on. Bring him on. Bring him on.
So,
Waylon Mercy's cool, though. I just,
Oh, he is. He's handshakes Gary Scott and then knees him right in the balls. Brutalizes him, strangles him. This guy's clearly a serial killer. So then he knocks him to the floor. Scott goes to crawl back in. Mercy's holding the bottom rope to let him back in, and he just snaps it across his lower back.
Lowering the boom, as Vince
That's
said.
Tremendous.
I've never seen that before or since, and I really like it as a bit.
There's one that we're not going to see because it's on Superstars, But he did the spot where he had someone on the apron, like the Sheamus 10 beats of the Baldron or whatever that is.
Yeah.
Where he pulls back against ropes and starts chopping and starts like wailing on with the overhead strikes. So he has the rope pulled back for whoever can count one, two, like let him go three. Four. He lets go of the rope. The guy springs forth and falls, hits the guardrail, gets counted out for the loss.
Oh, man.
Almost seems just catching, let go of the rope, and all of a sudden the guy just springs to his death. Brilliant.
He's great. There is just such a unique energy about Waylon Mercy.
He's maniacal.
And it's just because I like it, and I'm almost nervous. Obviously, we know that we know the roof that this thing has in this company. But it's just the fact that it is so different that you can almost imagine Vince being a little bit wary of it because it's so different to the stories that he's always told and feels like works. I would be anxious. I wonder whether Vince was anxious that, oh, this is going to be too offbeat for people to really get, when really it's just perfect and of the time.
I wish someone else had a gimmick like this. I mean, of just trying to be a nice guy, but the sinister overtones are just so obvious. Like, someone like Brody Lee could have pulled this off, I think.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Right size for it, too. Just the scary eyes.
Like disheveled looking sort of. Mm. Yeah, you need like a mountain man type thing.
Mm-hmm. Like, I'm a nice guy. I'm a peaceable man. And he's, you know, he's conspiring in his brain to tear your heart out.
I feel like Killian Dane could have been that, because Big Damo was sort of medium Damo by the time he was let go, because he trimmed down a lot and he was a lot slimmer and a lot quicker, but still had that sort of aggressiveness about him. And I feel like he could have maybe pulled off a Waylon Mercy-esque character.
Some guys that if you just give them the chance to be something like that, but we'll never know. A lot of them played one note characters for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And we never saw that sort of creative brilliance. Mercy finishes here with the choke sleeper, eyes bugging out of his head. He looks like Cheep Sheep from Super Mario. Just eyes permanently wide open.
That's a good shout.
We get the end of the In Your House report from Todd, who definitely turns into a SummerSlam plug.
Mm, just slides right in there.
Unfortunately, they got rid of the classic SummerSlam theme, which made me very unhappy.
I know. They've gone for something a bit just generic, haven't they?
Yeah, it's like a stock theme. You see Owen and Yoko retain against the Allied Powers In Your House. Hey, here's Shawn beating Jarrett again. Why not? And then we get Diesel beating Sid in the main event, which Shawn played a big part by diving on the Sid. Todd Pettengill says, Shawn Michaels, the pit bull of the World Wrestling Federation, he doesn't run from anyone. Prepare to be contradicted.
Well, are we sure about that, lad?
And then we get the footage of Mabel beating up Diesel during the main event. And we get a decent-looking Mabel promo, where he calls his King of the Ring win grueling. For whom? The audience?
Yeah, I think Mabel didn't really work that hard in the tournament. Did he get a bye?
Yes.
he is a heel. Grueling. Christ.
Yeah, he is a heel, so he's allowed to embellish. And we're supposed to be like, no, you didn't. You like, that's kind of the point, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. But then if Todd's saying it's grueling.
Well, he had to watch it.
How do we feel about King Mabel's first promo heading into SummerSlam?
Wasn't bad. Talking about how Diesel isn't worthy of being in the Federation, challenging him to put his belt in the lines, like, you know, if you're man enough. Just a good monster promo.
I like it. I like how the twist is that, hey, look, I'm the king, which is the top title in the company, but you're not man enough to face me. At the moment, I'm not afeared for what's to come.
Oh, just you wait.
I know.
We can't do the script reading during that match because I'll be too busy laughing at certain parts.
Oh, yeah. We'll do it during Karma Undertaker, during some of the slower points of Karma Undertaker.
Okay. Next week on Raw, we have Owen Hart and Yokozuna versus Razor and Vega for the belts. Didn't Razor decide to lose it In Your House? Why are they getting a shot?
Is it because now in the storyline realm, is it because the finish was disputed?
What finish? Okay, the Rage Masabio just... Oh, even then, so oh, why no, are they contending?
Actually, it wasn't, was it? Because they lost clean as a whistle. Yeah, wasn't even contested. Yeah, you're right. It wasn't contested. Yeah, screw it.
One's a face, one's a heel. Keep it simple for the fans.
Vince, let us tell a story, man.
Well, I'll tell you a story.
Let results mean something.
This isn't AEW. What are you talking about?
I know. Big shout out to that guy, by the way, that did the big Hangman Page thread on Twitter, mm-hmm. which you linked us to.
I mean, it's more patience than I have.
Gosh, but I love that. And if all of that is deliberate storytelling, then yeah, I am an AEW guy. If that is deliberate storytelling, that's kind of, brilliant. As a fan, what I want. So...
I've seen some of the underlying subtlety, but I haven't seen all of it. So that thread was a great read.
Mm, it was so good. It's on my Twitter at Tom Campbell. You can see it there.
Can we come to our main event and the reason why we're here? Bret Hart versus Hakushi. Hakushi still has the severed head, which that's quite a sentence. We get some timely references to baseball pitcher Hideo Nomo, who was kicking ass for the LA Dodgers at this point, and I believe was Rookie of the Year in 95.
Okay, that's good. I was going to ask you about him, but then now we know.
Had this really unusual pitching delivery where he'd put both arms well over his head before swinging back to throw the ball.
Ooh.
He was good for a few years there, but then he kind of petered out, I think, due to injuries. But he was a damn good player in his prime. So Shinji gets involved with some pre-match attacks. Hakushi gets the upper hand early. At one point, Hakushi sends Bret into the rail, and Vince notes that Hakushi will be fined for using the railing.
Yeah, that wasn't a thing that happened, was it?
Well, I think I can explain.
Okay.
This is my theory. At the time, Vince had hired someone, a man named Drew Ortman, to basically be a company representative as he tried to avoid getting relegated to lower time slots for reasons pertaining to violence. They were trying to pare down the violence in the company. Because they were afraid because of some measures that were going on in Congress at the time. They were trying to relegate like kids programming or adult oriented program, whatever, to God, I'm bungling this. Let me try to figure out the best way to phrase this.
No, I get it. So they are trying to stay whiter than white, cleaner than clean.
Yes.
And this will come back to us when we talk SummerSlam, because there is this big anti-weapons policy in WWF at the moment, anti-foreign object policy.
You're right. I'm glad you brought that up.
To the point where, like, Sean and Razor Ramon will have to deal with something quite unique for that, which we'll talk about in time to come. So I guess the idea that...
Vince was saving face.
Yeah, Vince was saving face because they've done something that they've kind of gone against. So therefore, by saying on the commentary table that, hey, that's going to be a fine, like, for those lesser educated, may be enough for them.
He shouldn't have done that, but we'll take care of that. We'll admonish him later. You know, it's like, it's a standard part of the wrestling show. That's why Lawler had to apologize for hitting Duke Tracy with a trash can the previous year.
Yeah, that was weird. So
this is where we're at, 1995. Thank God for ECW. And so it becomes a bigger problem when Bret blades at the fifth in your house. Oh, he just got a little cut when he hit the ring steps, and then he put his hand up and had it there for a long time while his face was to the ground. And
Bret Hart's bleeding. That's a fine.
That's a paddling.
That's a paddling.
So Hakushi goes for the pump splash. Bret gets the knees up. Bret takes over for a while. Then we get a really awesome spot where on an Irish whip reversal, Bret slides and hits the bottom of the ring post back first. Like he just slides into this horizontally. Almost gets bent in half. Then Hakushi follows with a baseball slide to the ribs, which look great. All sorts of stuff going on here. After the break, we get the proto Bronco Buster from Hakushi. Hakushi's just dominating at this point. Surrendered. Perish that thought. And before next break, Brick gets sent to the outside. We come back from break, and then we get the creme de la creme of maneuvers here. As soon as we come back,
yeah,
Hakushi For the first time ever on American wrestling television, the space flying tire drop.
Wow.
A cartwheel, backflip, and then a full backflip over the top rope cleanly right onto Brett in one fluid motion.
Wow.
That was the pièce de résistance right
God,
there.
God, he's so good. Akushi's so good.
It's tremendous.
He's so good. These two are great. They're just gelling. Oh, it's like I'm watching a good wrestling show. And like normally when I'm prepping for the Classic Raw review, I'll have the show in question on and I'll have the observer next to me. So I'll kind of be looking back and forth between the two. If I spot something that's of interest on there, I'll stop and I'll write it down. I'll make a note. Brett Hakushi, about 3 minutes in, I just stopped my writing and I just watched it. And it's nice as a wrestling fan when you get to do that. Just sit and watch it.
Just watch two pros doing what they do best with their unique styles, the ways in which they're different from one another. And they had time to work and they excelled. Of course, one of the most beautiful moves ever done in the history of Monday Night Raw. Brett does fight back, Naganaga on the heels. Then he goes up to the ropes while they're on the floor and gets like a pump splash from the middle rope, almost like a capirata, but no flip. Like, this match is just nuts.
It's ridiculous. They're just going for it.
Slugs the Shinja, maintains control. But back in the ring, Hakushi regains control for a bit, but he misses the diving headbutt. Comes back superplex, finishes with a sharpshooter. Then after the match, gives Shinja a pile driver.
Yep, Observer says here, it appears this was Hakushi's last match with WWF. Word that we got was he wanted to leave. And it's certainly...
You mean Shinja.
Oh, yeah, sorry. And it certainly appeared this is the last of Shinja Akiya Saito. It was Hakushi's best performance in the WWF in a match, every bit of a 4-star match.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Hakushi will hang around for a while longer.
Shinja, however. Observer says they think it was Hakushi's last match.
Maybe that was just misinformation or just a poor assumption.
Plans change.
Hakushi will hang around until like February, I think.
Right, okay. But it's the end of Shinja. It's the end of Shinja.
Yeah, he was in the office at this point. He finished up with the company the following year, and I think he just retired from the business after that.
I liked Shinja. He was good in this role. I think he was an overbearing, and I think he jumped in when needed to. It wasn't too in your face. I thought it was a good fit for Hakushi to have him there.
Yeah. Nice compliment piece.
Hmm.
And undefeated at WrestleMania.
Of course.
When him and Pat Tanaka beat the Rockers by countout at WrestleMania 6.
There you go.
When Sean patted Marty in the back and then Marty fell over the rail. Probably the first time that's ever happened.
Oh, that's great.
And in the midst of Brett's celebration, Jean-Pierre Lafitte comes out and steals the headbag. Sorry, Brett, you're still in the mid-card.
Sorry, but your main event is in another castle.
I was going to say that. Perfect. Your push is in another castle. He wasn't ahead. At this point, he had to fight Raiden from Mortal Kombat, a pirate, and a dentist. And he's still one of the best parts of the show.
We haven't got to the dentist yet, have we?
No.
Oh, God.
This is why Bret Hart will never get anything less than my fullest respect.
Because he went deep into that mid-card, didn't he? And he was pulling people up like he was pulling people out of the water.
Bret is just a master.
He worked so hard to bring these people up to a level. And like, there's people like Hakushi that should have been at that level anyway and should have stayed at that level. Like, I wonder whether... I reckon Hakushi and Diesel could have had some fun.
No.
No?
No.
Oh.
Brett got the best out of Hakushi, got the best out of Diesel. Who gets the best out of each other if it's those two? That's a style clash. Brett's more compatible with people.
That's true.
You need some of that mechanic mindset in there.
Yeah, that's true. Still. Liked him in the main event. I'd liked him more in the main event. But 4 stars. 4 stars on a night of Raw. That's good.
I agree. So.
So we need something... because this is the Classic Raw review. This is like, and it's during the darkest time in wrestling. Like that Bret Hart Hakushi match, as you can tell by that sweet exhalation, that was a a water fountain in the middle of a desert. Because
and now for...
we are now back into the desert, aren't we?
Yes. And now for the antifreeze chaser.
Woo, here we go. Here we go.
Tom, this sucks.
Oh, I am intrigued. And I said before we started recording, I'm intrigued to hear your thoughts on this as a Philadelphia man, as an ECW super fan. I'm intrigued to hear your thoughts on the following segment.
I got to the bottom of the soup bowl when there was a severed thumb. I was so good up to that point. So now, the franchise Shane Douglas was the cornerstone of early ECW.
Cut my fucking music!
Wasn't quite there yet, but he was. But the spirit was definitely there.
Mm-hmm.
He was there, and this is an ironic thing to say, given the hatred level, he was there Ric Flair.
Yeah.
Just the arrogant, salt-of-the-earth champion that turned away every challenge through his ring generalship and his veteran wiles. He was the anchor, so to speak. He was just of that ilk, just the high society bad guy with all sorts of athletic accolades, could cut a great promo, good technician, fairly good ring general. So they bring him to the WWF in 95. Good. Can definitely help this company if you let him be Shane Douglas. Well, they let him be half of that. He was still Douglas. But now he was Dean Douglas, evil school teacher.
Your attention, class. Your attention. Thank you. Definition. Knowledge. The sum of what is known. The body of truth. Information and principles acquired by mankind. The fact or condition of knowing something with familiarity, gained through experience or association. The acquaintance with or the understanding of a science, art, or technique. Knowledge. Dean Douglas. Dean Douglas, the personification of knowledge. Those in the World Wrestling Federation fraternity are certainly going to know what it's like to be graded. Much like you each knows that feeling down deep in the pit of your stomach after you spent the evening plagiarizing a term paper. After you've sat in class and taken that test, after looking at your neighbor's paper. Indeed, the superstars of the World Wrestling Federation will be graded by the person, the only person that has the knowledge to do it accurately. There will be some superstars here in the World Wrestling Federation who will get the same feeling in the pit of their stomach when they receive the grade that they know is coming. They may hope for an A. In all likelihood, they'll receive an F. Until next week, class dismissed.
Imagine that if you were Dean Douglas, and I'd like to see him critique one of your matches, King. I wonder what kind of grade you'd get.
I wonder what kind of grade Shawn Michaels would get, because we're going to talk to Shawn Michaels, ladies and gentlemen, live when we return before Monday Night Raw.
The franchise here was, in fact, a former teacher, taught economics and U.S. history. Very intelligent man, very eloquent voice. And his debut vignette here, all he wanted to do was talk in his own voice. That first off, Alfie from A Christmas Story. He went from looking like a 1950s matinee idol to this. He just looks like a dork. Franchise. This is the man who was wrestling Cactus Jack in 1995. And holding and Tully Blanchard in one of the most horribly misguided matches of all time went 40 something minutes, and I don't know why. No offense to Tully, on it. So, the first five words of my notes here are Dean Douglas vignette. Oh no.
Because we know what this is. And
so, this is what happens. He walks in, there's an unseen class there, just idle chatter of the students. And they won't listen. And he does the fingernails across the board routine, complete with sound effect. Today we're going to learn about knowledge. What is knowledge? And then he gives five fucking definitions for the word knowledge. Five. Like, one would have sufficed, but now we're just padding. And Shane, when Shane would have that devilish rasp, cut my fucking music. Here, very stuffy, using his upper register. And very monotoned. And in fact, in between his words, he had like this weird little sort of purse smirk he would do. Like, he was so proud. Like, his words, like you can't see out there listening, but I'm showing Tom.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he raised his bottom lip a little bit and like pride or whatever. Just the sort of stuffy pride he would have in himself. He's talking about how, basically, I'll be grading the wrestlers of the World Wrestling Federation, and I can assure you that they will not make the grade. They are not up to par here, and this is just going like, oh my god, this is even worse than ever. Like, an evil school teacher could work if you let Shane cut promos his way, but apparently Vince was insistent, of course, according to Douglas, on speaking in this clipped manner, this monotone fashion. If he did it as like the franchise voice, it might have been fine. But no.
So this. So Shane Douglas was really reluctant to sign with WWF. And mm-hmm. he eventually realized, look, I'm just going to put me concerns about this to one side. And we'll see how we go. What's the worst that could possibly happen? And he signs. And he says, this begins the worst 6 months of my career. Within 2 weeks, he was there 2 weeks and he was called into a board meeting. And he talks about this on Hannibal TV. He did a shoot interview on Hannibal TV. He was called into a board meeting with writers and he was told to take his shirt off and spin around so they could see him. I don't know. And while he did that, they went through his resume. And on his resume, he lists that he's like a qualified teacher and he's got a whole bunch of qualifications in a bunch of other things. And the writers just got really excited about making a wrestling teacher. And they got so bogged down in the detail. Like, and it must have been infuriating to be there because they're like, okay, we're going to make him a teacher. No. He's going to be bigger than a teacher. He's going to be a professor. No, he's going to be bigger. He's going to be a dean. Yes, because Dean Douglas, it's alliteration. We like alliteration. He's got a PhD. No, he's got 8 PhDs. And they just suddenly, that was it. And he just had to stand there and go, yeah, okay. They just got so, like, they had this one bite of this one idea. And it was obviously something they'd wanted to do forever, like to make a wrestling teacher. And that was it from there. And he went, okay, you're now Dean Douglas. You're going to be a wrestling teacher and you're going to talk about grading the wrestlers as he does there. And so that's the story. He just said it was the worst 6 months of my career. And I agree with him.
Why was the spin around important? Like he has the shoulder blades of a teacher.
Yeah, I didn't get that, but he was very keen to talk about it on Hannibal, where he talked about how, they wanted to look at it from all angles for whatever reason, and you notice that he didn't talk with the inflection again. He was told he wasn't allowed to use the inflection because he was told as the smartest man, he has to talk in a certain tone and not give that angry energy. It's got to be that arrogance. And Vince thought that that gruff tone, that Douglas type tone, just didn't work for a teacher. So he had to step away from all of that. He hated the powder blue singlet that he would wear come his debut, which we'll talk about down the road. But he's very angry about the whole thing. But that's it. So yeah, so not a good time. Not a good time for Dean Douglas. And we're going to watch it all transpire over the next few weeks and months.
Spoiler alert, in January 96, it's back in ECW. So we come back from that bit of awfulness. Get some nice Stridex product placement on the commentary desk. Like I have just three containers of Stridex sitting right there, like it's like they're energy drinks. Like you can get by having an energy drink on the commentary table. It's like, oh, maybe they're drinking it during the show. Why are Stridex there? God, I'm feeling oily. calling Waylon Mercy matches.
they're big on the Stridex for SummerSlam.
Well, product placement, they're a sponsor. Kind of fits the target demo.
Oh god, yeah. See, didn't they say in an advert? It might have been in the hype for the show from Todd Pettengill, where he says, you know, like Stridex, bigger is better. Like what? A bigger Stridex pad? A bigger spot coverage? Why would bigger is better be an appropriate line for a?
I think the pads covered more ground at that point. They made them wider or whatever.
Right. Okay, that's fine. I'd rather be happy than right. That makes sense.
Plus, you know, Diesel Mabel to main event. Bigger is better.
Bigger is better. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, you tell yourself that, Vince. Speaking of Mabel, next week he'll be in action as well. The Body Donnas, Bam Bam Bigelow. As I write, wow, we just seen the entire triple threat of Douglas, Bigelow, and Candido.
And they're all not doing it. They're all not doing the triple threat thing.
We get some interview time from Sean. Happy to win the belt. Lawler calls him a marked man. Sean says, you want a piece of me? You can have it. And that will lead somewhere.
What, a bit of Sean and Jerry?
Indeed.
Intriguing. I like how these live shows end, because you can always, they're always rushing to get to the end. Like they're always like it's the timing's always a bit off, and they'll never quite get that right for many years. So I do like a live one for that very reason.
At least you feel the energy, though. It's better than just a sterile tape show.
Yeah, the energy is very much there for this show. I think it's the fact that we've got that beauty of a 4-star match in there, a nice Sean-Jimmy Del Rey match, and it's the energy of a live show. This is what makes this Raw feel very special.
It was a good show, and we might as well enjoy it, because I'm not sure the next few will be up to that level. But we'll see.
We'll
diminishing returns on... It's the taping schedule, diminishing returns.
We'll cross that bridge as the warmed up cold cuts come in. And until we next get together, it is my job to tell you that he is at JRHRising on Twitter. I am at Tom Campbell on Twitter. We are at Cultaholic on Twitter. Don't forget to join us. Jimmy Del Rey wasn't that big. Dave Meltzer, you're being very harsh. Powder Blue doesn't also not suit Dean Douglas. Love you. Bye. Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.